Hello, I'm Sam Clements, and welcome to the special mini episode of the Picture House podcast. Today, I am joined by director Dominic Cook, and we'll be talking about his directorial debut, feature debut anyway, on Chesil Beach. Dominic Cook is an experienced theatre director, most recently having directed Follies at the National Theatre and the South Bank in London, and that was beamed out via satellite to cinemas across the UK. So you might have seen some of Dominic's work on a big screen, but not a feature film. So Dominic's moved into feature filmmaking, and this is quite an epic first film, really. It's an adaptation of Ian McEwan's short novel, and it stars Saoirse Ronan, her follow-up to Lady Bird, and it's got Emily Watson in it, and it's got Anne-Marie Duff in it, and the male star of the film is Billy Howe, who has been in quite a few films recently, and he's got loads more coming up. And he stars opposite Saoirse Ronan. They play a couple in the film, and I was lucky enough to talk to Billy. So after Dominic, we'll cut straight to Billy, and I hope you enjoy. On Chesil Beach is in cinemas now, and I recommend it. Looks beautiful on a big screen. Enjoy. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Dominic. Really looking forward to having On Chesil Beach in our cinemas.
Me too.
How does it feel for you, like, at this point, just before we go into the UK release? Because you've not particularly been through this with a film before.
No.
Sort of that mass release sort of frame of mind.
It's a very different rhythm to anything I'm used to, which is to build up to something and then it gets shown to the public. You know, there's this period, a long period of post-production, and then there's the period of preparing to open the movie and to sell it and all of those things. So it's a different rhythm. But it's interesting because you get to talk about the film and think about the film having with a bit of space.
Mm.
And actually, there's a bit of reflection, and life has moved on a bit since we did it, which is actually quite a beneficial thing.
Because the film premiered in Toronto.
Did, yeah.
Which is September. About 6 months ago now.
Yeah.
But also, of course, before then, there's post-production. So
yeah.
People are often maybe asking you about stuff you did.
Yeah.
I don't know when you shot it, but a couple of years ago.
About 18 months ago. I mean, we've also shown it in different countries. I've seen it in quite a few countries, and with different audiences here and abroad, different ages, and that... It's been fascinating. It's been fascinating because the film resonates with all sorts of different people in different ways.
Mm.
And to sit in an audience, it's not even what people say to you. It's just hearing how they respond moment to moment tells you so much. And a lot of it's unexpected. You know, different cultures seem to respond to it differently and different generations do. But it's been very alive. And it's a film that gets people talking. There seems to, you know, people come out of the screenings really engaged with it. So, yeah, that's been a really interesting experience.
What do you remember from sort of going back to Toronto, taking it to that first festival, you know, huge international film festival, and leading up to that? What frame of mind were you in then?
Well, I was in a really weird frame of mind because I had opened the night before a huge musical. I directed this production of Follies, Stephen Sondheim's amazing 1971 musical, which is huge, got 37 people in it. And I had opened that the night before.
Crikey.
So that was an epic thing that took a lot of work. It opened, I was on a plane first thing the next morning to Toronto and in a cinema the next night. So in some ways that was good because I didn't have any time to think about it, but it was a bit like an onslaught because those festivals are very intense, you know. There's a huge volume of work being shown and a high temperature around it. And it was the first time we'd really exposed the film to a public, albeit a festival public. So I was a bit like a rabbit in the head. But I loved being there. I loved the feeling. I like Toronto. I've been to Toronto before. I like Canada as a country very much. And I was really, it was fascinating to be in that kind of crucible. And to the audiences there are very engaged. So to sit with them and talk to them about the movie was thrilling. Yeah, it was exciting. And we got some great responses to it as well. So it was encouraging. Yeah.
Nice. I guess it's a good like early gauge for you know, what will happen when the film is sort of goes on the general release of the territory.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I guess the themes of the film are quite universal, no matter what country you grew up in. But the film is set at a very specific point in Britain. Was that sort of a concern with showing it to a Canadian audience, first of all?
Well, actually, I thought the Canadians would connect because they have that connection with Britain. You know, it's a very interesting culture in Canada. It's got a fascinating mix of a lot of the North American kind of positivity and expressiveness with a sense of that British history and reserve. So I thought they would probably connect with that side of it. I mean, it is really specific, but I think sometimes the specific is universal. As you say, the situation, which is the frontier of this couple having their first night together, having never slept together, but they're married. So a huge amount of expectation being brought into that bedroom, into their hotel, their honeymoon suite, is a universal. I mean, you know, people relate to that. But they are very, very much, they and the situation are very much products of a very particular time. And it's a time that people don't necessarily think about very much because it's that moment just before the revolution of the 60s kicked in. And we might as well have been in the Edwardian era emotionally. And in terms of the kind of material circumstances that they're living in, we're still in the post-war austerity zone, actually. So it's a, I thought the choice that Ian had made in the book and in the script of setting it just before things started to change, it's a really interesting moment. And I think the codes of that society are very much built into the way we made the film so that people who aren't familiar with that period can understand, you know, what was going on around these young people to shape their inner worlds in a way.
I think the film does a really good way of educating the audience about, you know, what it could have been like back then as well. Because you spend a good amount of time with them in their courtship and, of course, in the bedroom where everything is very sort of formal. It's really perfectly encapsulated with the waiters bringing that not too appealing looking dinner and that sort of awkwardness, which I think got a good response from the audience I was with.
Right, yeah. British food at that time was pretty grim.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, rationing had only finished 7 years before this. Oh, wow. People forget, you know. But the British history, British food, I mean, we've come a long way.
But then not very long after that, you do get to see, you know, some of the music and some of how the culture changes.
Yeah.
It's really, I was like, oh yeah, of course. Before then, especially in their courtship, you know, walking through fields and you know, it feels like it could have been set 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, I really wanted to stress that, you know, things can change in a society very quickly and very suddenly. But if you're caught the wrong side of that, you know, you might as well have been born 30 years earlier. And part of the tragedy of this couple is that a conversation might have opened up a few years later that would have allowed the outcome of their relationship to be very different. And you know, I think the film essentially is quite progressive in that it's saying that the changes that happened in the mid to late 60s were really good and that we've evolved through that. And fortunately, we have all sorts of challenges in the times we live in, but fortunately, we're not living in a time where to, you know, try and have an honest, open, engaged conversation with your lover, with your partner, with your husband, with your wife about how you feel is seen as something alien. It's seen as something that's to be encouraged. It's not easy to be honest in relationships, I don't think, but it is something that we would aspire to as a society. So it's the film is kind of on the side of progress in that way, I think.
Speaking of honesty and sort of getting into that frame of mind, how did you work with your two stars, Billy and Saoirse, sort of in pre-production and before you got on stage? Did you do rehearsals like you might do in your sort of theatre work? Or?
We did do a few days rehearsal. We didn't have much time, however, because the film, we had to start shooting before the leaves on the trees turned brown.
Of course.
We were filming at the end of October and we had to try and convince the audience that it was still summer. Saoirse had just come off shooting Lady Bird.
Wow.
And so there was a little narrow pocket of a few days, but they were very, very productive. I mean, the thing is, the two of them are exceptionally bright. They are fearless, both of them. They want to tell the truth. We had Ian there who was amazingly supportive and helpful. And we did, in that time, just the 3 days, sat sitting around a table, and we did an awful lot of work together talking about the history of the relationship and working through, for example, that very long scene on the beach, which is a key scene. We kind of shaped that scene, not physically, but we shaped what was happening between the moment to moment. And all of that contributed to them coming onto the set with a real strong sense of who the characters were and what the situation was. And then the joy of filming is the pragmatic moment-to-moment response to what the actors are doing, which I love. I love watching a take, coming up with suggestions, and actors as good as that are hungry for new thoughts and new ways of doing things. And you want variety, really, so that when you get to an edit, you've got options. And they were very adept at that.
also adds authenticity to it. If things come up on the day and change, like, those are maybe more likely to things that might end up in the final film.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not dissimilar to theatre, actually. You have to plan. You have to be ready. You have to have options for what you're going to do, but you also have to stay open, I think, to what comes up. Mm. Because you don't know what will come up on the day when those actors are working together in that situation, when you've got your crew contributing. You have to be listening and watching very carefully so that you can make the most of whatever you've got. And I love that mix of kind of planning and preparation with pragmatism and openness. I find that really exciting.
How do you remember sort of the edit of this film? Because again, unlike theatre, this is a new part of the process.
Yeah. Well, I work with a fantastic editor called Nick Fenton, who's very, very sensitive and thoughtful. And we did a lot of work. I mean, we really changed the movie a lot. I mean, this happens, I know, on every film, but I think when you look at it, it's a not dissimilar process to doing a first preview on a play. When you've got an assembly of the film and his first assembly, you look at it and you understand the film in a new way. And then you have to make sure that you're telling a consistent story. You have to be prepared to adapt when you see that and make sure you're consistently telling the same story. At the same time, you're getting a lot of input. So it's like, how do you filter that out in a productive way? So we did do a lot of great work together. I really enjoyed the process. I mean, you know, when you're doing a film like this with lots of flashback, it's about how is that working within the main story? Mm. Are we diverting for too long? Are we losing track of this relationship? So we had to take quite a lot of beautiful work out of the film where it wasn't really building that narrative about those two people. Anything that the film didn't really like, anything that didn't go down that path. So, you know, but it was a creative process and a really good one.
Sometimes less is more, of course.
Absolutely right, yeah.
Am I right in thinking the film was shot on film?
Yes, we did shoot on film, which I loved. Mm. Yeah, because the previous thing I'd done on TV was digital and we had cameras rolling all the time. And I mean, there's a joy to that. We were shooting battle sequences. We were shooting these huge battle sequences that went on for, you know, we had so little time and I needed to get as much footage as possible. So I was just like, roll, keep rolling, run around again on your horse, you know, just keep it, just give us material. Whereas this, we were much more controlled. The way we wanted to make the film, Sean and I, was very controlled. So we wanted a minimal number of edits. We were influenced a lot by John Huston and the period, the film, and David Lean, filmmakers from that period, and watching how economical they were with the camera. And we were working that way, and actually having film and only using one camera, really, you know, because you've got that sense that the film's going to run out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I loved it, and I love that thing of you have to pause to check the gate, all of that romance of that, and you hear the film whirring through the camera. I really enjoyed working on film, and it gives it visually a very particular quality. So
absolutely, I think that the actual beach looks so good with the pillows, especially Saoirse's dress, and how the pebbles are looking.
Yeah.
You do have that very long take on the beach, and I was sort of thinking, how long can he keep this? When does it start to run out?
Yeah, no, we did. I mean, it was a fascinating thing with Sean, because we decided we were going to do absolutely minimal setups and make sure that we were really making creative choices with the camera at all times. So we would shoot as many scenes as we could in one setup. And that was a great discipline, actually. I mean, it added to the level of planning we had to make. And sometimes, you know, there come a point where you think, actually, we're cutting our nose off to spite our face. This is ridiculous. We need to move the camera into a different setup. But I really enjoyed that discipline. Yeah.
Fantastic. We're really looking forward to screening this film. It looks so good on a big screen, and I'm sure audiences will enjoy.
Right. Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you.
So, Billy, what's your relationship like with cinema? We're just talking about, actually, maybe you don't get much time off being an actor, but is cinema a form that you like to go and enjoy?
Very much so. Yeah. I come from a household where I have three brothers, and we're all very much into film, and it's very, very, very eclectic taste as well. I used to watch a lot of art house cinema, but I mean, for instance, when I was, this is just an example, Solaris, the Tarkovsky film, I think I watched when I was 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea what was going on. but visually, obviously, it's incredibly evocative and has really stuck with me, those things. And so, yeah, as a medium, it's something that I've been fascinated with from a very young age.
Is it something, I guess, being a fan going into it, are you sort of thinking about you know, things that the films that you liked when you were younger, when you're choosing roles and you're thinking about what films are coming your way, how you might play your characters?
Yeah, both in a technical way and more to do with creatively driven choices. Yeah, the sorts of roles I wanted to play. I feel like that's happening, which is a really wonderful position to be in. And I feel very kind of blessed and fortunate for that. But yeah, no, I think deconstructing film and, you know, analysing technically what's going on is very important for an actor to do as well. Mm. And, you know, I won't name any names, but there's a lot of actors who don't, for instance, know what a lens size means and, you know, why this shot is being shot in the way that it is, for instance. So, yeah, so both sides, really, I'm interested in, because I feel like that whole, it's a very collaborative medium and has to be.
Yeah.
And if you kind of think it's all about you as an actor, then I don't know, things can fall to pieces, or you can get a bad rep, definitely.
Doesn't sound like a good way to make friends.
No, certainly not. And also, that's a very important aspect as well, is that, yeah, you are working together in a very particular kind of close-knit, you know, community of people. You know, a film set, I think, like a sociologist would be like, have a field day, kind of going, what on earth is this dynamic? You know, it's so particular and it's so unique. But yeah, it's important to make bonds and friends, you know, with everyone you're working on the film with, because we all need each other, you know.
Absolutely. It only works if the team is working.
Yeah, right, correct.
So when you finish the film and you're sort of in this phase of the sort of journey taking it to film festivals and premiered at Toronto, I think, on Chesil Beach.
That's right.
When you're in the screen watching the film with an audience, do you switch off a part of your brain, the actor part, and can you enjoy it as an audience member, or are you critical of yourself?
Well, of course I'm critical of myself, and that's, you know, and that's very, very hard. Yeah, I can, you know what, it's a muscle, it's a thing, it is a switch, subjectivity, objectivity, and it's really important to be able to do both. As I said before, you know, I love watching any film, and sometimes I'm deconstructing it and driving my family mad by giving a kind of commentary on it whilst it's happening. And then other times I'm a bit more of a purist, and, you know, I'll be there and I want to, you know, absorb the film in its entirety and let it have its desired effect on me as a viewer. And so, yes, I try my best, particularly, you know, if I'm in the film, and I'm quite new to that, obviously, there's not many here, I've done many. When I do see myself on the screen, I have to try and see it as the character that I'm trying to portray and not me. There are, of course, moments where I go, God, I wish I hadn't done that, or, you know, I would have done that differently. But that's also a very important part of the process as an actor, is because that gives you something. It's a learning curve. Mm. And I think if you don't review your own work as a proofreader would as an editorial or whatever it might be, I think it's the same thing. You've got to check your spelling. Mm. And that's what I'm doing. I'm checking my spelling and my grammar.
Especially with something like On Chesil Beach, the editing is so important and how it uses time. Is it, you know, sort of interesting seeing it unfold like it did on the script, rather than remembering the shooting order?
It's always tricky, because it's almost like you have to leave those bits behind once they're done. You know, they always say you make the film three times, and that's in the writing, the filming, and then the editing. But actually with this, I feel like there's been a really, really honest and true through line. That they haven't made three films, they've made the film they set out to make, and that's rare.
Wow, yeah.
You know, because there can often be technical problems, there can be this and whatever. And of course, yeah, you go back and you reshoot scenes sometimes, and they do ADR. But it's like, with this, I think there definitely was a narrative arc in the making of the film, you know, as well as in that. But in the editing, yeah, I mean, it's an incredible process, and I do not envy that person, particularly with this, because of the way that Ian, even from the beginning in the novella, manipulates time. Mm. But cinema, as Tarkovsky said, is about sculpting time.
Of course, yes.
So yeah, the edit is incredibly important. But I mean, already we have a scene order in a script, and that chronology, or lack of, really helps to tell the story. And it's done for a very specific reason, and everything is in its right place. And I think the editing in this film is done incredibly sensitively as well, and only actually really enhances what was there before.
Absolutely. I think the sort of the core conceit of it being in that hotel room, and the dinner weirdly being brought into the hotel room by the waiters, and then the bed being right there, and how the editing really fleshes out what's going on in the characters' brains at that point. Like, you get such an intimate knowledge of the characters by the time they actually make it over to the bed.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite rare. Like, I thought that was quite a special thing to witness as an audience member.
Yeah.
Like, seeing them come together like that.
Yeah, it is quite unique, and it's a very difficult conceit or device to use well. it's often overused. There's so many films where I see that. It's like, well, how do you see what a character's thinking? Mm. Well, hopefully the actor's doing their job and you see it in their eyes. Mm. But in this case, there's so much information that needs to be told for us to understand the context of the hotel room scene and why, for some reason, it feels like a sort of red pressure cooker slash kind of stage almost, you know? Mm. Like it's a platform and it is a stage, and the bed is sort of feels like this ritual thing. And there's something really perverse about that, you know, and grotesque almost. And we talked about that quite a lot. And the choice of the colour red obviously is just, you know, is very suggestive. And so we feel the heat, you know, you can sometimes, I think there is a bit, you see a bead of sweat, and the sweat is not, you know, glycerin, which they do sometimes use in films. We were just really hot. it really did feel like a pressure cooker. We shot that at the end of the whole thing. So wow. All of the flashbacks and the courtship, and actually even before Edward meets Florence, we had all of that in our minds already. As actors, so we had a lot of ammunition, and so creating that awkwardness and the required pressure in that scene between the two of them, it was very authentic.
Because it feels almost like it's like their first date in a way, and it's interesting that you actually had a lot of experience with each other before then to get to that point where you can play that so well.
It's very interesting because I think, you know, for a modern audience, that it's kind of tricky because we know that, you know, sometimes first dates can lead to the bedroom, you know, these days. But in those days, that just wouldn't happen. Mm. You know, there were these traditional archaic values, you know, believed archaic, about matrimony and waiting to consummate the marriage until after the first night of the honeymoon, which some people still firmly believe in. That's absolutely fine. But it's important to remember that that's what the protocol was. Mm. And that's why it feels like the first date, even though they've been saying they love each other for months, you know, and have had this kind of bucolic, you know, idyllic thing, walking through Oxford Meadows and him giving her flowers and all of this stuff, you know. So the romance is there and the love is there, but love is not sex, you know, and that's
Was it sort of hard to get into that frame of mind for that final, you know, that main sequence after having all of those amazing, the courtship scenes are so nice, and you're willing the couple on as an audience member, so when it gets to that room, it's quite a surprise sort of where things go.
I mean, no, to sort of mind those things, I had to, you know, for Edward to convey that. I can't speak for Saoirse, obviously, you know, she had her own method. But for me, it's that sort of desperation and the horniness of a teenager, essentially, you know. It's that absolute need, that lust and that amount of testosterone that leads someone to not only sort of be desperate, which is an incredibly unattractive quality, but also then very aware and self-conscious as well, because he's lied about having, you know, slept with however many girls, and that is kind of humorous at the same time, but it's dishonest, and it's male bravado, and it's very unhealthy. And Edward's smart enough to recognise that. He just doesn't recognise it soon enough.
With this character, you go through, you know, quite a full life. What's it like when you get to the end of the shoot and you're sort of remembering, you know, what you did, what you didn't do, and saying goodbye to that character? Is that quite easy to do?
It really depends on the project. With this one, it wasn't the easiest because we had such a wonderful time making the film. But it's really important to say goodbye to that character. But the thing is, the character is eternal because it's indelibly marked on what you... Well, actually, yeah, on celluloid because we shot it on film. Even more exciting.
That's great.
But not only that, but, you know, it's in the words as well that Ian wrote. I'm going to wait a long time before I read that novella again. Put it that way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
That's right, my pleasure.
We can't wait to play this film in cinemas.
Yeah, thank you.
It looks amazing on a big screen.
Thanks very much.
You have been listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.